here on FM, our Book of the Week. Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes narrates the exploits of the first balloonists and mankind's yearning to take to the air. The late 18th century passion for ballooning was perhaps at its strongest in France, where the public's enthusiasm was fueled by regular displays of aerial courage. But this new dimension of human experience was not the sole preserve of men.
The most justly famous of all the French revolutionary balloonists was a woman, the small, fearless, and enigmatic Sophie Blanchard. Born at the seaport of La Rochelle in March 1778, Sophie somehow became involved with the experimental balloonist Jean-Pierre Blanchard, who had first crossed the Channel with Dr. Jeffreys in 1785 when Sophie was only 8. How their romance began remains a mystery, since Blanchard was already married with children and spent much of the 1790s touring the cities of Europe and America. But it was rumoured that he first saw her when she was still a child, standing at the crowd at one of his launches, and vowed to return and marry her when she came of age in 1799. However, the first definite record of them together is not until December 1804, when Blanchard took Sophie on her first balloon flight above Marseille. According to him, she was immediately smitten, breaking her customary painful silence to gasp, "Sensation incomparable." Pictures show her to be petite and pretty, with large eyes and a dark fringe. But she was also said to be frail and bird-like, abnormally nervous on the ground, terrified of crowds, loud noises, horses and coach travel, and shy to the point of self-effacement. Yet all this changed completely once she was in the air. In a balloon, she became confident and commanding, a natural entertainer and a provoking exhibitionist, daring to the point of recklessness. Blanchard, who was aging and nearly bankrupt, evidently saw the possibilities of reviving his aeronautical career with this fearless young woman, who could instinctively control a balloon, manage aerial fireworks, do acrobatics, and wear eye-catching hats and dresses to please a crowd. He married Sophie when she was 26, and she became his balloon partner for several years, taking over all the arrangements as his health gradually failed. Blanchard died from a heart attack in 1810 while landing in a damaged balloon near The Hague. Immediately after his death, Sophie gave her first major solo balloon display in Paris. She seems to have caught the Emperor's attention during a midsummer ascent in Paris on 24th of June 1810. Soon after, she was asked to contribute to the celebration mounted by the Imperial Guard for Napoleon's marriage to the Archduchess Marie-Louise of Austria. From then on, she became a fixture at the imperial court, with propaganda as well as entertainment duties. Sophie had by now developed her own peculiar free style of ballooning. She abandoned her husband's large canopy and unwieldy basket, both of which were by this time much battered. To replace them, she commissioned a much smaller silk balloon, capable of lifting her on a tiny, decorative silver gondola. This was shaped like a small canoe or child's cradle, curved upwards at each end, but otherwise quite open. It was little more than 3 feet long and 1 foot high at the sides. One end was upholstered to form a small armchair, in which she sometimes slept, but otherwise the gondola offered astonishingly little protection. When she stood up, grasping the balloon ropes, the edge of the gondola did not reach above her knees. It was virtually like standing in a flying champagne bucket. She also began to adopt distinctive outfits, which could be seen at a considerable distance. For this purpose, her dresses were always white cotton and narrowly cut, with the fashionable English Regency style of high waist and low décolletage. Her sleeves were long, coming right down to her knuckles, presumably to keep her hands warm at high altitudes. Most important of all, she wore a series of white bonnets, extravagantly plumed with coloured feathers, to increase her height and visibility. The combined effect of these dramatic clothes and the tiny silver gondola was to make her look both flamboyant and vulnerable. She also appeared terrifyingly exposed, an effect she evidently cultivated. The defeat and subsequent exile of Napoleon seemed to pose Sophie Blanchard few problems. When the restored Bourbon king, Louis XVIII, entered Paris for his official enthronement on 4th of May 1814, Sophie made a spectacular ascent from the Pont Neuf with fireworks and Bengal lights. King Louis was so taken with her performance that he immediately dubbed her official aeronaut of the Restoration. Evidently, Sophie had no qualms about this shift of political allegiance. Her only loyalty was to ballooning. 4 more years of brilliant public displays followed, with Sophie established as Queen of the Fireworks Night at the Tivoli and Luxembourg Gardens. At the height of these displays, her small white figure and feathery hat would appear like some unearthly airborne creature or apparition, suspended several hundred feet overhead in the night sky, above a sea of flaming stars and coloured smoke. Towards midnight on 6th of July 1819, a hot, overcast summer evening, Sophie Blanchard, aged 41, began one of her regular night ascents from the Jardin de Tivoli, accompanied by an orchestra in the bandstand below. At about 500 feet and still climbing, she began to touch off her rockets and Bengal lights, drop little parachute bombs of fizzing gold and silver rain, and ignited a lattice of star shells suspended on wires 20 feet below her gondola. As the gasps and applause of the crowd floated up to her through the darkness, she became aware of a different quality of light burning above her head. Looking up, she saw that the hydrogen in the mouth of her balloon had caught fire. It was amazing that it had never done so before. Many of the crowd thought it was just part of the firework display and continued to applaud. The flaming balloon dropped onto the roof of No. 16 Rue de Provence near the present Gare Saint-Lazare. The impact largely extinguished the fire. Sophie was not severely burnt, but she was tangled in the balloon rigging. She slid down the roof and caught onto the parapet above the street. Here she hung for a moment, according to eyewitnesses, calmly calling out, "À moi! À moi!" Then she fell onto the stone cobbles beneath. As the 19th century drew to a close, the dream of free flight was increasingly handed over to proponents of various forms of heavier-than-air machine. Working airships would appear in France by the end of the 1880s. In Germany, an experimental Zeppelin, with an aluminium body and a Daimler petrol engine, would fly over Lake Constance in 1900. The Wright brothers flew their aeroplane at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, in December 1903. And Louis Blériot crossed the Channel in July 1909. Meanwhile, aerostation itself began to seem old-fashioned, almost a form of antiquarianism. Within a decade, it had declined essentially to a rich man's hobby and fell largely into the hands of eccentric aristocrats and wealthy sportsmen. There was a great vogue for champagne ballooning, reaching its apogee in the Edwardian period, when the famous Gordon Bennett annual long-distance balloon race was inaugurated in 1906. There was a glamorous ballooning season, as for racing, polo, or yachting. In Britain, this aerial champagne culture produced an extraordinary late fashion for female balloon acrobats and trapeze artists. Dozens of celebrity female aeronauts and artistes began performing at county fairs and festivals across the land, executing acrobatics, releasing aerial firework displays, or doing parachute jumps, in a tradition that went right back to Sophie Blanchard. Many of them are only remembered by a few colourful posters that have survived in provincial museums, announcing their promised aerial feats in 60-point letterpress and garish red, green and gold illustrations. Posters can still be found that announce Miss Marie Merton's ascent at Wolverhampton Fairground in 1891. Or newspapers that advertise Maud Brooks and Cissy Kent as the stars of Lieutenant Lompriere's aerial show. A poster declares that on the 2nd of June 1891, Miss Maud Brooks will drop from the clouds at the cricket grounds, Rotherham, in South Yorkshire. She will endeavour to alight within the grounds, but in the event of not doing so, will return with all possible speed, appear on stage, and give an account of her aerial voyage. These performances were not as frothy and light-hearted as they seem. Maud Brooks was seriously injured when her balloon collapsed during an ascent from a Dublin garden party on the 25th of May 1893. She managed to release her parachute, but 50 feet above the ground, it tore and she landed heavily, breaking her legs and arms and permanently damaging her spine. Such threats of death or injury hung over all of these aeronauts. Perhaps the most famous Edwardian balloon girl was 20-year-old Dolly Shepherd. flying regularly from the Alexandra Palace and fairgrounds all over England, she popularised a truly terrifying balloon act in which she ascended several thousand feet hanging beneath a trapeze, then pulled a simple release cord and dropped back to earth by parachute. Dolly used no balloon basket at all, but hung, fully exposed, from her trapeze bar, dressed in a blue-trousered flying suit, with a jaunty cap and tight lace-up boots to show off her legs. Her only instrumentation was a tiny altimeter, which she wore as a silver bangle on her left wrist. She had many male admirers and received several offers of marriage, but she had an even greater following among young working-class women, who regarded her as a portent of women's rights. In 1908, Dolly gained a national reputation when she ascended on twin parachute harnesses with her friend Louis May. When Louis's harness failed to release at 12,000 feet, Dolly performed the extraordinary feat of transferring the petrified Louis to her own trapeze while still attached to the balloon. She then pulled her own parachute release, which worked, and with Louis's arms locked around her neck, brought them both safely back to earth on a single parachute. Louis was unhurt, but Dolly suffered severe back injuries, which left her paralysed in a wheelchair for many weeks. Astonishingly, she recovered, and continued balloon parachuting for several years afterwards. Yet many felt that Dolly was being exploited by her balloon, Svengali, a mysterious Frenchman known simply as Captain Gaudron. He arranged all her flights, supplied her equipment, including her provocative uniform, and also the release mechanism that failed, but only paid her piecemeal by each ascent, and certainly without any life insurance. Yet Dolly would always speak with a naive rapture and a certain nostalgia of her balloon experiences. Her passionate attitude seems expressive of this late period of extreme risk-taking. "I never lost that sense of wonderment and ecstasy whenever I floated alone in the awesome silence. Every ascent renewed in me those same feelings of delight and contentment." As the parachutes were still relatively crude and the balloons increasingly old and ill-maintained, the performances were always far more dangerous than the sporting fairground atmosphere suggests. Frequent injuries and regular fatalities occurred, as also happened in the Edwardian Circus. According to Dolly, most of the parachutists with whom she worked, even the most glamorous ones such as Maud Brooks or devil-may-care Captain Smith or handsome, dashing Captain Fleet, somehow disappeared, as she put it in her memoirs. They may have been killed, but the more sinister possibility is that, like her, they suffered spinal or internal injuries. But unlike Dolly, they may have been paralysed or disabled for life. There was no attempt to regulate or license the displays, let alone to ensure the lives of the performers, until the First World War brought such frivolities to an end. Nevertheless, like their contemporaries the suffragettes, many of them, such as Dolly, insisted that they were striking a blow for women's freedom. These young aerial artistes, so dazzling in their courage and carelessness, were some of the last representatives of the great 19th century tradition of ballooning as entertainment. They were both the stars and the victims of the show, and it would be difficult to judge how far they were liberated or exploited in their métier. Like beautiful sacrifices, they would be offered up to heaven, and like angels, they would drop back from the clouds for the edification of casual onlookers.
Rory Kinnear was reading from Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. Tomorrow's episode at the same time tells the story of three men, one balloon and the North Pole. After the news, Leanne Benjamin talks about her 20 years as principal dancer with the Royal Ballet.
Life and Death in the Tudor Court, a season of programmes on BBC Two.
It was a bear pit, primeval, primordial drama.
And central to it all was a commoner who became queen.
She was a woman who chose to step into the tough political game.
But how did Anne Boleyn become so dangerous she had to die?
She played a winning hand. Ultimately, she lost.
With contributions from Hilary Mantel and David Starkey. The Last Days of Anne Boleyn, tonight at 9 on BBC Two and BBC Two HD.